CKUT's annual funding drive is back and taking place from March 17th to March 26th. We have exciting new merch available for our donors, including t-shirts, tote bags, and baseball hats. Thanks to the generosity of this year's sponsors, CKUT will also be serving up a selection of scrumptious prizes for those who donate over $30. This year's sponsors include Pop Montreal, Encore Books and Vinyl, RIDM, CNL Cycle, Cinéma du Palc Beaubien and du Musée, Adam Hart, Cinéma Moderne, Just Seeds, Au Vivre, Festival du Nouveau Cinéma, Cutting Edge, Mutech, Death of Vinyl, La Rama, Le Seltzer, Dispensaire Microbrasserie, Logé Lyon, Pizza Bouquet, Drawn and Quarterly, and Constellation Records. CKUT would like to thank our sponsors for supporting another year of people-powered community radio. For more details on prizes and to donate, go to ckut.ca/donate.
On va faire deux sets ce soir. Ça, c'est la première.
So I'll cry, so I'll cry, so I'll cry.
Welcome to Voices of Montreal. I am one of your hosts, Carla, and I am joined with
Adele,
Zoe.
And I played the song Cry, Cry, Cry because she mentions when it rains in Los Angeles, and it is currently raining in Montreal.
Yeah.
Which Zoe's not too fond of.
No, I hate rain. Yeah. I think like snow was better. But
it means we're going into summer, so it's a good news.
Spring is coming.
Yeah.
Woo. In fact, so today we have the pleasure of all three of us being political science majors, which is woo. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm excited because we all have a similar field of interest.
Yeah. Poli science is kind of a big major here. Like, I feel like it's quite popular in the arts department.
Especially among French people.
Yeah,
especially. A lot of French people rejected from Sciences Po are coming to McGill to study poli-sci. So it's interesting. Yeah. So, Carla, you're U2, right?
Yes, I am U2.
So, why did you choose poli-sci?
Okay, so the reason why I chose poli-sci, I'm going to try to make, like, the long story, I'm going to try to make it a very short story. So I, at first, wanted to be a lawyer, like I feel like 50% of people in poli-sci. I applied to law school. I applied to 4. I got rejected from 3. I got waitlisted in 1. And I'm like, you know what? Poli-sci is the next best thing. And I love politics. I love watching like The West Wing. And like,
what is The West Wing?
It's a TV show about the staff of the president of the United States, who's like not an actual president, but you know, it's a person being the president. I watched that when I was younger and I loved it. And I was like, okay, well, if I cannot do that, my second best option is I want to be either chief of staff or director of communications for a politician. So then I started at McGill, and about 2 weeks into the semester, I received a wonderful letter telling me that I got into law school. But it was 2 hours away.
Yeah.
And the school already started. So I'm like, you know what?
Do you regret it or no?
Absolutely not. I do not. There's not a single day where I tell myself I should have gone to law school.
Great. But I thought that law school in Canada was after like doing your bachelor.
Everywhere except for Quebec.
Okay.
Yeah. Quebec is the only place where you could do an undergrad as law. I have 2 friends who are in law school at McGill. They seem to like love it, which great for them. But just seeing them do it makes me realize I never could have done it because my mental health could not take the amount of work, the amount of stress. Going into law is just a lot. And I just know that I did not have the bandwidth to withstand it. My parents have a hard time understanding that, but yeah.
They will. Yeah. And you, Adele, why did you choose poli-sci?
Well, first, because that's the domain I'm interested in. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that what I did not want to do. So, like, all the scientific stuff. I was good in maths, but really not interested in anything related, like, in any fields or jobs that it would lead to. And even my whole family is scientific, so I had to make myself heard.
You're like the black sheep.
Exactly. And now my sisters are kind of following my path. So I guess I launched a new trend in my family. But yeah, I still don't know why I'm studying political science, but I really like it because it kind of encompasses history and what's happening in the world right now with the news, and also like some analyzing thing and text. And I always liked reading a lot, and that's what we do in poli-sci. So I guess that's why.
Okay, interesting.
How about you?
Oh, so I chose poli-sci because I think like it's pretty general, but at the same time, pretty specific too. So that's one thing I liked. And I'm really interested in history, but more in like recent history. And I like how you can like study people, but also events, and it makes you travel like without moving.
Yes.
And I don't know. I wanted, like, before coming to McGill, I wanted to be, like, working for the UN. I don't know if I still want to.
That's
so cliche. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But, like, I'm growing up and I'm realizing that maybe it won't be a good career path for me. But I really love the courses here. I think it's really interesting. It was hard at first because it's very different from any French system or anything. And like learning English and everything, it was hard. But now I really love it. I think like the poli-sci department here is really good.
Yeah. And also the skills that they teach you are very like transferable. It's a lot of like learning how to like critically read a text or critically.
Yeah, and thinking, just
like, thinking and reading and writing. Writing is for me like the biggest thing I've taken from poli-sci. I'm much more of like a clearer writer now. In anything I write, honestly. I recently wrote an article about the dress code of the National Hockey League. And
oh, interesting.
I structured it as if I was about to like debate my poly theory teacher and be like, no, this is the reason why the dress code should not exist. And I'm really grateful for that because I think it's not a lot of majors that teach you how to like write in a like a persuasive way where you could like build up an argument. And I really don't want to bash people in STEM because listen, they're doing all the hard work. But that being said, I think it's something that goes underestimated, especially people in STEM. When they take like a poli-sci course for the first time, they think it's going to be easy, but then they realize how much like reading you have to do and how much writing you have to do.
Yeah, and you have to be interested in history, but also in economy, also in cultures. Like it's pretty like plurid, dimensional and disciplinary. So yeah.
And
it's interesting.
Yeah, and there's so many subfields of political science. I'm pretty sure that each and every one of us is like interested in going into a different subfield of political science.
Yeah. What's your favorite?
My favorite is political communication.
But it's not a field, right?
It's a field in like the wide, like if you go into politics, it is a field. It's, you know, like press secretaries, the people who communicate with like journalists. It's the people who organize the press conferences. It's like it encompasses so much that you don't think of all the time. It's the people who handle like the social media for a political party. It's the people who help write like a press release.
Yeah, the discourses too.
Yeah, people who help write, you know, speeches. A lot goes into political communication. And at McGill, we do have some courses. It's not like a proper subfield like, you know, poly theory or comparative politics, but I feel like there should be more classes of it. I'm trying to take all the ones that are offered to me now. I think it's like just such a cool subfield.
And you, Adele, what's your favorite field?
Well, I'm trying to discover all of them because we have to take class in each. And for now, I'd say international relations interests
me too.
The most. But yeah, like it's the thing that relates more to like exploring different countries. Well, actually in comparative politics too. So that
I like the courses we're taking together on comparative politics because it actually teaches you things that you don't know. You have no like prior background on it, on each subject, or you're learning about like, we were talking about Ghana, Nicaragua, and it's pretty interesting.
You get another view of all the world countries
that
you wouldn't if you were not taking these classes, so yeah, definitely.
And also, I know we all have taken the same professor, which is Daniel Dueck. I have to say, I absolutely love him because
you do.
He is so nuanced in his approach to comparative politics, and I like how it's not like a whitewashed version of political science. I mean, no, there's not that many courses at McGill that are, you know, whitewashed versions of political science, although I have taken some that I will not name. But I appreciate how he's like, oh, well, you know, if there are these problems in the Middle East that are happening chronically over the time, you need to look at, you know, colonialism. And that was a big, like, factor in a lot of the problems that are happening now. And sometimes it's uncomfortable for people to hear that.
Yeah.
And they kind of, I mean, there's this hard thing where, like, sometimes where you present people with like a institutional or systematic problem, they take it as a personal attack when it's like I'm not attacking you, I'm attacking what like your ancestors 500 years did, and we still have to live with the consequences
but
of it,
you know, like this term whitewash, like it's the first time I'm hearing it, And it's pretty cool that in Canada all these things are happening, because in France it's not the same. Like, you couldn't say that. Because, yeah, like, you cannot say this teacher is whitewashing you, because everybody is doing it. So it's pretty interesting. So how do you, like, recognize that kind of behavior?
So I'm Haitian. Mm-hmm. Not to put you guys on the spot, but just to say, my dad is very critical of France, which, like, I mean, you have all right to be when, yeah, you know, your country was colonized.
Of course. So
I think just growing up, I already had a very, like, skeptical view of, like, you know, the US, the UK, France. Mm-hmm. And also I'm a minority in Quebec. So I think that, like, influences everything.
Of course.
That's taught to me, you know. So when you go to elementary school and they're like, oh, the French people were so nice to indigenous Canadians. And you're like, were they?
Yeah.
Were they so nice? And, you know, I don't know. Quebec is, like, a very complicated place. And I could make, like, a 10-series podcast on, like, just Quebec as a whole. Because it's so weird. Because it's, like, it's a place that's been colonized but has colonized others. And it has a, like, real difficulty with, like, confronting that. Although, like, it's starting now, but, like, not really. But
I didn't know that.
I feel like you're lucky to have been able to be critical as early. Because, yeah, I feel like I'm only being critical, like, since I came here.
Yeah.
Like, before, I was in class learning geopolitics, and I was just absorbing everything, yeah, that was being said to me.
Yeah.
And here, it's because also we were in high school, and I guess that's why it's good to go to university, but going to another country and seeing the different perspective, like the fact that we stress really much, the colonization thing, that really we didn't have that at all in France, even if we were studying these topics.
Thing that was pretty shocking for me, like, we learned about the Rwandan genocide.
Yeah, I was thinking
only last
about that.
Year. I was 17. That.
Really?
Yeah. We never talked about that before. And it was, like, in one particular class. Like, my friends that were, like, in scientific domains, they don't know anything about it. I think it's pretty shocking.
But even the Rwanda topic that we had, because it was about how justice was made after the genocide and what happened between Rwanda and the Tutsi and the Hutus, for those who still don't know about this. And I was also surprised that we didn't talk much about the role of France in this genocide. I don't know about you, Zoe, because we're not in the same schools, but for me, we just said one sentence, like, oh yeah, and France helped and gave some weapons. Mm-hmm. That's all. Like, it was really unclear what we said about this.
Yeah.
But actually, France has been doing a lot, like, in this. And yeah.
Yeah, but I think, like, this whole, like, colonization issue, like, it still causes some problem in France, because the same, like, we only learned about the Guerre d'Algérie like last year, and it's not like in history courses. I think, like, one reason is that it's too recent and people are not, like, ready to be confronted to that kind of topic. But also I think it's really important for us, like, as young people, to know what happened, to not be, like, xenophobic and everything. Yeah.
I think people are, like, sometimes scared of being uncomfortable, and because, like, it is uncomfortable to talk about, you know, like, the role your country had to play in, like, the massacre of people. It's very uncomfortable. And I think a lot of people think sometimes that when you're criticizing a country, it means that you don't love it, or that you're not... I mean, I wouldn't say I'm, like... I don't
not
know, like,
patriotic.
I don't think patriotic is the word, because I don't know. But if I criticize Quebec as much as I do, I love living in Quebec. Listen, it's a great place. I get a very cheap education. I have free healthcare.
I didn't know.
Yeah, like, I have the health card.
Oh.
Yeah, when I go to a hospital, I flash my card. And
and it's free in Quebec?
Yeah, it's free.
And in Ontario, it's not the same.
It's free in Canada. Not everything is free. Like, if I have to go to, like, the eye doctor, I have to, like, pay out of pocket. But, like, if you usually have insurance. But, you know, like, there are so many great things about living in Quebec. And, like, listen, I love living in Quebec. But I think it's just acknowledging that it could be better. Yeah. And I feel like that's what people have an issue with. Like, listen, I'm sure you guys loved living in France, but I'm sure you have issues with France.
Of course. I think it's important to acknowledge the past, the defaults of your country, because if not, like, I mean, it's not perfect. And how can it improve if we don't criticize it? And what annoys me, though, is like sometimes when some people have this idea of a country and of the people living in it because of the past history or because of the politics that are happening, that like I personally learned German in school. And so because I like the country, it's a beautiful country. It has many cultural aspects that are really interesting and beautiful. And the language also is good. And I hear people saying, what, you're learning German, the language of the Nazis. And I'm like, how can you judge a whole a country which has evolved now and which acknowledges his past and is ashamed of it, of course, and like can make generalizations like this on some people and like say, oh, I don't want to talk to any German because we are all, you know, fascists or things like that. And I feel like you can't do that.
Yeah.
That really makes me sad when I hear that.
I mean, I think it's because there's such an emphasis on like your national history in school. I went to school in Quebec. And so most of the time we talked about Quebec history, maybe the rest of Canada, but they always had to concern Quebec. If it was not like, say like the Halifax explosion, which like you can't really like, the Halifax explosion, I learned about that in Sejep. But if it wasn't like something that like concerned Quebec, then you didn't really hear about it. And I imagine it's the same if, like, you go to school in France.
Because, like, each state has its own program.
Yeah,
like,
so here you have the federal system. So certain things are provincial, certain things are federal. So say, like, defense, that's federal. Like, you won't see, like, the Quebec Army. Education and healthcare, which are, like, the two biggest things that, like, touch you in your daily life, those are provincial. So the healthcare system, it, like, changes from province to province, but it's like somewhat uniform. Like in most places, I won't pull it up now because like my wallet's all the way over there. I have like my health card, which I like get from when like you're a child, when you like pay taxes. Well, my parents pay taxes here. Yeah. You get like your health card. When I applied to school here, I gave them like, I have a like a permanent code and I entered that. So that gave me like Quebec tuition.
It
varies province to province. And it depends on like, if you live in a province that has like a conservative government, they might like cut back stuff. But if you live in say like, I don't know, BC, that has a very like progressive government, you might have like more access to stuff. Like I know that recently, I think they made the birth control pill free in BC recently, which like, great. Mm. I would love to see that here.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, but it varies province to province. Same with like the drinking age.
In the States.
In the States it's 21. In Quebec it's 18. In Ontario it's 19. Yeah, that depends on what province you're in.
Yeah, because your country is so
big.
It's logic that you have to divide like issues. Yeah.
But actually in Germany also they have that.
Yeah.
Although it's a small country.
So. I believe in France it's like a unitary system where like all decisions come from
centralized Paris. Centralized in Paris.
Except for like maybe like municipal stuff. I imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have states like you do. Like
You have like the département? Like,
but they don't really
they're more like
mean
regional.
That much.
Okay.
It's more like to help organize a country to make it efficient, but I don't think that they have really a big role.
I mean, I kind of get why you would do that because like I don't know how many departments do you guys have?
I don't even know.
I think 80 or 80 or 90
and departments.
But like imagine if each department had its own government with its own representative. It would be hell. It would be absolute hell trying to organize all these people to try to get them to like agree on something. So I kind of get why some countries like going like the unitary route where it's like, okay, no, we're just going to have like one government that decides for everyone because like it's a lot. Politics is complicated.
I just checked. We've got 101 departments in France.
Oh. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
How many regions?
A bit less, I guess.
13, I think.
I don't know.
Okay, so like
it's such a shame.
Yeah, so imagine.
I never learned that at school.
Yeah, so like imagine if all those regions had like a government, it'd be hard. And then there's like clashes between like the federal and the provincial.
Yeah.
And imagine if you have like almost all of them are progressive, but then you have the one conservative that's really stubborn and doesn't want to get along with other people. It's complicated. Politics is complicated. I feel like that's like...
And we go back to like the Middle Ages if we would do that.
So. And it's also like so complicated to just switch systems out of nowhere. Exactly. I'm taking Russian politics right now and...
How do you like it?
It's fine.
It's interesting. I mean, it's a hot topic right now.
Okay, the course is very interesting. And while I do love the professor, I have to say I received my midterm the other day and I'm very salty about my grade. I'm maybe not the most complimentary about the course right now. And I also am not a fan of the exam structure, but other than that, I think it's a very interesting course. But you know, these past 2 weeks we've been learning about when Russia went from like a command economy to like a capitalist system. Okay. And they tried to do it as quickly as possible, which I don't know if like just hearing it sounds like, well, why would you do that? And you see how much chaos it brought of like 8,000% inflation.
Oh my God.
Like, yeah, you would like go to the bakery in the morning to try to buy something with your money that's worthless. And then you would go in the afternoon and your money was even more worthless than it was in the morning. Like,
it's crazy.
Yeah. And I understand why like some countries don't want to do these like massive organizational changes because they take time, they take money, they take resources, they take like so many valuable things, they take time. And like, imagine if like Emmanuel Macron, like the last 2 years of his mandate, decides, you know what, we're doing a federal system now.
Well, he would have a lot of people against him, and it's already the case.
We won't talk about that.
Yeah, but like, no, but like, imagine like you decide it's like a years long process. So imagine then people vote that, you know what, we don't want you in power anymore. So now you have to bring another team of people who are like maybe not caught up to date or maybe don't want to do it. So like, yeah, it's understandable why there's no like big political shifts. Because it's complicated and things
and
change all the time.
People are protested and going to the streets and everything.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like French people are really, like, vindicative.
Quebec people, we kind of take that from the French, too.
Yeah.
Like, in 2000, have you heard about the Printemps Érable?
Oui. Yeah. Sorry.
I feel like that's the most, like, French Quebec ever got. Do you know about it?
No.
So, in 2012, the Quebec government, which at the time the premier was Jean Charest. Yeah, it was Jean Charest who had been there for, like, 9 years. He wanted to up student fees. Mm-hmm. And it would, like... So, at the time, Quebec was paying, like, the cheapest student fees in all of Canada. And with his, like, you know, proposed, like, you know, bumping them up, they would still be the cheapest in Canada, but the people here were like, absolutely not, we are protesting. So every single CEGEP, every single university, including McGill, which like that doesn't happen very often, that McGill like takes part in like a big protest, we like tend to be doing our own thing, but a bunch of people just went to the street and they protested. And
did you participate?
I did participate. I was how old? I was 10 at the time.
Oh,
my dad was both a teacher and a student. And he was like, no, you are coming with me and you are learning what democracy is and what standing up for your rights is. So I did go and I banged a lot of pots and I had a fun time, even though I didn't really understand what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So I think we're going to like move to a song now because we have been talking for quite some time.
About poli-sci.
About
oh my God.
Poli-sci, which maybe not the most fascinating subject, but normally it would be like a news type show that would be playing right now. Adele?
Yes.
Yeah,
I can choose a song if it works. Well,
yeah. So while Adele handles that, Zoe and I, we're going to be talking about what we're going to be doing once after the music. So we have a few questions that you've taken off of Pinterest, which I have to say, great taste. Pinterest is a great platform. I would
we
argue
love it. One of the only social media that is not like addictive and harmful. So it's great. I love Pinterest.
What I love about Pinterest, it never changes in a negative way. I've never seen Pinterest roll out a change where people were like mad.
Yeah. And also it's just like it gets you inspired.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that. I don't know if you remember when Donald Trump was banned off of all social media platforms. He got banned off of Pinterest.
No.
And people were like, what are you banning him from? But like,
he has no Pinterest account, right?
Yeah. And like, if he did, what would he pin? Like cute outfits to wear to the rally. So, yeah. Adele?
Yes, let me introduce you to our next song, which is Elle laisse de Colin Rio.
Thank you.
Le brouillard, la pluie et le goudron mouillé. La nuit est grande.
Back.
Yep.
Yeah. After a few like technical difficulties, we are back. I believe that you have your questions ready, Zoe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to start with, what are your thoughts on revenge? On revenge. You would think like sometimes it's justified or no, it's really like a philosophical question.
What type of revenge are we talking about? Because depending on it, I may have or may not have enacted revenge on a person.
I don't know.
Okay.
It could be any revenge.
Okay. This is the part where I get really personal. My ex-boyfriend was maybe not the best in the world. I won't expose him on radio, but he knows what he did. So when I was like really mad, I took his email and I signed him up for the Jehovah's Witnesses.
What is it?
It's the people who come to your door and try to convert you to Christianity.
No, you did that?
I also signed him up for Scientology and a bunch of like music.
But that's so funny.
And like every single time for like, I think 2 weeks when they would ask me to sign up with an email, I would put his in it. Which is, it's very mean, but I think in the grand scheme of revenge, it's not like the worst thing you could ever do.
No, it's not the worst, but
yeah, still. I didn't like give his email to like a mob boss or anything, but
yeah.
Also, I would like to say I was like 16 at the time.
Okay.
I wouldn't.
Fair enough. Yeah. You're young.
Yeah, I wouldn't
We're
do that.
Too young, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't do that now. I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to sign you up for all these things you don't want to. I'm going to sign you up for a free trial at Costco. Like, I'm not going to do that. But thoughts on revenge?
Adele, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I have two little sisters. So when I was young, I remember that it was very important to me to take a revenge on them.
That's so true.
It was so
between
stupid.
Siblings, yeah.
Yeah, I remember, like, I don't know, she did something that annoyed me, and because I was like very angry, I put a yogurt at her, and
yeah,
and then I regretted it so badly. That's what happened each time. Each time I wanted to take a revenge, I regretted it a lot, and now, like, I'm not a resentful person at all. So even when I had disputes with people like in class or something, I was like, it was just, yeah, okay, we don't agree. I mean, that's okay.
Yeah, I think now that I'm, like, older than I was when I was 16, I've learned to, like, talk about my problems and not just enact, like, really petty.
Just express your feelings.
And express,
like,
my
getting
feelings.
Out of your system.
And, at the end of the day, if I could go back, I wouldn't do it. I would just express my problems with them. And once it's done, it's done. I would just, like, stop talking to them. Like, I feel like that's the more, like, specific approach. It's not the easy thing to do. It's not easy to be, like, the grown-up in the situation. And I understand if sometimes people are like, you know what, no, I'm not gonna be better, I'm gonna, like, stoop to my lowest point, because sometimes you just need that. Sometimes
you
need,
but in the short term,
to be petty,
like,
to
you
move
feel
on
better, but after a few days or a few years you won't. So you have to ask your question, like, how am I gonna feel about this, like, in 5 years?
I'm not gonna lie, sometimes the best revenge is just going and living your best life.
Like, how can it be useful to take a revenge and do more bad than what has already been made? Like, I think that if you just leave it, the person with time will actually feel the pain of having done something wrong. Or I believe a bit in karma, like, not really, but I think that you will always bear the consequences of your actions.
Yeah.
At some point.
Do you think that everything's happened
for,
like,
a reason?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of my questions.
I think it does.
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like
patterns. I feel the same too. Mm-hmm. I think, like, even if it's not, like, intentional, like, your actions always will have consequences, whether you wanted it or not. So I think everything happens for a reason. But sometimes, like, there's things that are so, like, unjust.
Yeah.
Unfair.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I mean, some things happen for a reason and some things don't. I feel like when we say something happens for a reason, it's very, like, much geared towards our lives. We're not talking about, like, a massive, like, human tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But
if you, like, look at this in, like, a really, like, realistic point of view, it did happen for certain reasons, not good reasons.
I mean, the reasons are not always justified.
Yeah.
But
there are always reasons, like, factors.
Yeah.
Yeah, because something to be a consequence have to be caused by another thing. So, yeah.
Okay, so maybe we could move on to another question. Okay, that's another topic. But, like, do you believe in soulmates? It could be, like, love interest or, like, friendship soulmates, because it's something that I recently discovered, and I think that some persons are, like, friends soulmates.
Yeah,
like, they just found each other. What do you think?
Okay,
Ola?
this may be a beep. I don't believe in soulmates.
Okay, listen, I
gave this speech to my friend once when he was, like, complaining about being single, where I was like, listen, there are 8 billion people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Half of the people are men, half of the people are women. He was straight. So I was like, listen, there are, like, 4 billion women in the world. I think you're kind of delusional if you think that there's one perfect person for you, and that perfect person is in Montreal. I feel like you could have, I wouldn't say, I don't believe in, like, a singular soulmate. I feel like I believe in, like, multiple. I feel like there are many different situations in life where you could have ended up being with a person and being happy.
Yeah. But it's, like, different degrees, I think, of soulmate.
Like, I mean, I don't think that there's, like, one, there's, like, in the entire planet, there's, like, one person. And, like, without that one person, you're going to feel love, but it's never going to be true love. That's kind of like depressing and sad to think of.
Yeah.
I think that...
So it's more optimistic, like your point.
Yeah, here. It's more so like, hey, you don't know. Like, you could have many soulmates. Just because somebody who you thought was the love of your life broke up with you and the relationship didn't work out doesn't mean that you're doomed to be single forever.
Of course.
You're going to grow out of it and you're going to become a different person. And maybe that you're going to meet someone who's perfect for your different person that you are now than the person you were, like, X number of years ago.
Yeah, I agree with this argument, the fact that people change also, and so you can't have one soulmate. And also, for going back to the friends, having friends soulmate, I also don't believe in that, because, like, you know, when you're young and you're watching TV shows and like, oh, I have a best friend, this is the best friend, and I never had that. Like, I have many best friends and I can't say that I like one more than the others. But I know that some people are very close to just one person, that this doesn't apply to.
I think that some persons are your soulmate. Like, I disagree with you.
I think there's some
more
people...
like in friendship, yeah, than in love relationship.
I think there's some people you just have, like, a chemistry and you hit it off right away. Like, me and my best friend, we met in CJEP, and, like, during the pandemic, we just instantly became, like, best friends forever. And, like, we still are now. But I think some people you may be, like, you have a chemistry and you get along better and you, like, feel like your soulmate. But I feel like it's weird to say that there's only, like, one friend that's, like, your best friend, because I've had multiple best friends throughout my life.
No.
And I feel wrong being,
I've
like...
I've got a different history, wow. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm really, like, how can I say it? Like, I have the same friends for, like, it's been, like, 15 years. And we're still friends. Yeah, but sometimes it's hard because you grow up and you have to make compromise and efforts. But I think that some of my friends are my...
Yeah, but I have
soulmate.
Also...
I don't think you can friends. Have, like, one friend soulmate, but you can have several.
I mean,
yeah,
the same way that you could have...
With that, I would agree.
Yeah, the same way you can have, like, many soulmates in one life, I feel like you can have many friend soulmates in your life. And again, like, you're going to grow as a person, and maybe someone who you thought was your best friend, you guys grow apart because you don't have, like, different... like, values that are the same anymore, or, you know, you become closer to people, to other people. But I feel like you could have, like, multiple friend soulmates. I don't think you have a singular one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, once we agree. So, do you guys have any suggestions on another question? Or should I pick another one?
Okay, so before the show, I have to say, because I really am, like, interested. Before we show, we talked about what podcasts.
Yeah.
Because we all like, I don't know if we're addicted to podcasts, but I feel like we all, like, listen to various ones.
Well, I'm addicted.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
Good, me too. All three of us are, like, addicted to listening to podcasts. So I have, like, first off, what are some that you listen to, like, that are, like, your go-to every week you're tuning in and you want to listen?
Yeah, but first of all, why do you like podcasts? Like, what's your history with podcasts?
I want to absorb as many interesting ideas, as many advice that I can get from people in the world who have done amazing things. And I really listen to podcasts for interviews of these people who have done meaningful things that I want to learn from, mostly, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
And also because I always want more knowledge, and I feel like it's also a bad thing of me, but always... like, don't waste my time. And, keep doing things and being active.
Which I like how, like, on the go. Like, I don't want to listen. We're doing a radio show right now, but you know, the great thing with a podcast is that you can listen to it, like, whenever, wherever. Mm-hmm. It's portable. You're not, like, limited to, like, a certain location. Listen, there are great things about radio. If I didn't think that, I would not be here right now.
Of course.
But what I love is, I think, like, podcasts, there's just so many that, like, whatever your interest is, there's going to be a podcast about it.
Yeah, and also, like, it, because you're not, like, in front of a screen, it can, like, push you to be active. Like, you can go for a walk with a podcast in your ears and feel, like, productive in some kind of way. But on the other hand, I think that our generation, like, when you're walking around campus, like, everybody is with their AirPods, no one is talking to each other. And sometimes when I'm not listening to music or a podcast, while I'm walking, I feel like I'm losing my time. Yeah. So... And we need those times to, like, think and rest and yeah.
What's your favorite podcast? Like, what's one that you listen to every week, or one that, like, if someone asks you, like, what's the podcast I should listen to, you're immediately recommending it?
It's a French one.
It's okay.
It's my favorite, like, at the moment. It's pretty classic. It's one by Radio France, and it's called Affaires Sensibles.
Oh, I listen to it too.
I love it because it's always like stories, and I like the voice of the men doing it, and it's always like stories that I wouldn't like have heard of.
Yeah.
And yesterday I was listening to their first like Afro Notes. Mm-hmm. I think that was the term, and it was so interesting, and I like it.
Yeah, I also listen to podcasts from the radio, France Inter radio. They do a lot of series of podcasts on each specific topic, which is very interesting. There's one on spies, which goes through like deep historical details of this Chinese spy, this Russian spy, or like any like kind of in really interesting historical events that I really like. There's also what I listen to a lot because I'm really into running, is these kinds of podcasts which talk about the scientific things behind that sport, so, which is like the mental health, how to cope with injuries and all that kind of stuff, which I found very interesting for me to learn because it helps me in my daily life. So it's really useful what you can get from these podcasts.
Yeah, mine is, it's an English podcast. I do listen to French ones, but, you know, it's an English one. It's called Modern Love. It's done by
New York Times.
Yeah, New York Times. So there's a New York Times column called Modern Love, where they invite their readers to write in, like, stories of love. It doesn't have to be, like, romantic. Sometimes it's, like, you know, familial, or, like, something that happened with a friend. One woman wrote a love story about her turtle. Like, listen, it's great. And so they changed the format recently, but usually they would have like a celebrity come in and like narrate the story. They would talk to the editor of like, why did they choose to publish the story? And then they would talk to the people like since the story happened to see like, oh, what has happened since, you know, was there a resolution? And
that's cool.
It's so great because it's like a structured story, and like there's so many stories of modern love that have made me cry, and I'm not like an easy crier, but like a lot of them are like heartbreaking, and sometimes you cry of happiness. It like makes me feel emotions, and sometimes like there'll be like a joke that is said and I want to laugh out loud in the metro, but I know that I can't because people are like looking at me.
Yeah, I love also, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
Or you want to cry in the metro, but you can't because people are staring at you.
Yeah, and it's weird.
Yeah, it's just a great way to like make you feel things. And I feel like it's a lot more easy for me to just like listen to it than to have like read the column because have the New York Times. I don't have a New York Times subscription.
I don't have time to read the newspaper.
Yeah.
We have so many things to read already in our student life.
And it's a company too. Like when you're alone in your room, like in res, our rooms are really small.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
in the shower.
Yeah. We won't talk about that. And I like to just have a presence, and a podcast is always great. I think we could do a second round about our favorite podcasts.
Do I start since I ended, or do we go back to you?
Can I go back?
Please? Yeah, go.
Okay, so my second choice would be another French one, which is called La Leçon.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's a podcast on their mantra is like a podcast on the art of failure. And it's always like different personalities, whether they're really famous or not. They are asked the same question, like, what's your biggest failure and how did you recover from it? And I really like it. I like to listen to French podcasts because I feel like being here, I'm losing my French. So at least listening to French, it helps me.
I'm not gonna lie, I also feel that as someone who like is from here and like now I'm surrounded by English 24/7, I also feel like I'm losing my French.
Yeah. Especially my grammar. I'm making spelling errors.
Also, now having like speaking like Quebecois, and it really
c'est correct.
Worries me.
My dad's a French teacher, so like talking to him is the worst thing ever, because the minute I make a grammatical or a syntax error in my sentence, he catches me on it and he's like, "You speak French like Justin Trudeau now." And I'm like, "No."
Oh.
I know.
At least he speaks French.
He speaks French, but he makes a lot of mistakes. So that's what my dad is like poking fun of like, "Oh, you're making as many mistakes as Justin Trudeau because you're talking English all the time." I'm going to talk about mine. Okay. So which one I'm going to, okay. So, okay. I love celebrity gossip. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like it's so weird to like openly say I love celebrity gossip.
It's not.
Because I feel like people think that that makes you dumber, but like it doesn't. Like you're allowed to like petty drama between celebrity A and celebrity B.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't. It's not invasive.
Yeah, when it's not invasive and when it doesn't like, listen, I'm never like, I'm not the type of person who's going to like send death threats to like celebrities. Yeah. At most, I might be like, wow, it sucks that she did that, and I move on with my life.
Yeah.
But there's an Australian podcast called Shameless where they just, like, recap, like, celebrity gossip that has happened during the week. And I love it. I think I like dumb things. Maybe not dumb things, but people, things that people, like, reality TV. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, we could talk about reality TV.
Yeah, I love watching The Bachelor. I love watching The Great British Baking Show. I love watching MasterChef, any type of reality TV.
Yeah, but I had this debate with my mom, and she was like, it makes you dumber.
It doesn't.
No, it's just like fun. And
some
you...
are not dumb. I'm
some
sorry.
Some are not dumb.
Koh-Lanta.
Yeah, the French Survivor is not dumb compared to, like, all the people who say it's dumb have never watched it. And I feel like they can't make this... have this prejudice without watching it.
Yeah.
I don't think like, you can say that Les Marseillais is not dumb. I'm sorry. I'm from Marseille I cannot say it.
And I'm not going to watch this.
I've never seen Les Marseillais, but I have seen Les Anges en Vacances, which I think is such a great reversal of the traditional reality TV show. So basically, just to explain the show, there's a TV show called Les Anges, la télé-réalité, where it's a bunch of people like living in a house together and like causing drama. And what they did is that they told all of them, hey, we're taking you guys to a vacation house in like the south of France where you guys get to live it up for one summer. So they all say yes, because it's like a free vacation. And they get to the vacation house, and then the production's like, oh, yeah, so we lied to you. You guys are going to have to pay rent to live here. So every single week, you guys are going to have to do a job at the resort next door, and you guys are going to have to serve people during your entire summer. And people got eliminated. It was, I think it was a great show because it like flipped the concept of a reality TV show on its head. And also, I think sometimes reality TV is great commentary on society.
Yeah.
I watched The Bachelor, and
we don't have The Bachelor in France. So could you explain like what's...
So The Bachelor is you usually have one man and 24 girls, and each week some girls go home and they try to form a romantic...
24?
Yeah, like 24 at the beginning. and each week it gets less and less, and there's also The Bachelorette. And, you know, was it a few like years ago, there was like a conversation about on the show, was it The Bachelorette? I think it was The Bachelorette. There was this guy who was very like... He was kind of like weaponizing his Christianity to try to make the girl do things that she wouldn't necessarily, because she was also Christian. So he would be like, oh, you slept with whoever and that's wrong, but I'm going to pray for you. And like, and it sparked a great discussion on like guys who weaponize their Christianity to try and make you do things, you know, or guys who gaslight you.
Not like,
or, you know, like, it's sometimes it sparks a conversation about how like, hey, why are all the people on reality TV shows white? Shouldn't there be more diversity?
Of course.
There's a lot of societal debates that come out of reality TV. So I feel like it's so dumb to say all of them are dumb and they make you stupid when that's not the case.
Yeah. You cannot like put them all in the same basket, I think.
Yeah. What's your favorite reality TV show?
It has to be Les Marseillais because it's my city.
Yeah.
No, it's dumb. But I like it. It makes me laugh. And it diverted me. So that's the whole point of it.
Yeah, mine is because I'm very basic. I love Love Island. It's the holy grail of reality TV.
Yeah, I only watch reality TV shows which are connected to adventure. So like more like the kind of surviving in an island Or there's also one, which is a French one, Pékin Express. I don't know if you know it. Like they go through different countries just doing hijacking?
How do you call hitchhiking.
That? Hitchhiking, sorry. I can't remember this word each time someone has to remind me. Yeah, hitchhiking. And I find it so great. I might actually do it in my life because I really want to do that.
Yeah. So we've reached the end of our show. It was great having you guys. We're going to finish it off with a song. This is Hold On by The Internet, and we will see you all soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. It was great being with you guys.
Yeah. Bonsoir tout le monde, vous êtes sur les ondes de CKUT à votre émission d'art et de culture du vendredi, l'émission Café, c'est Alex qui vous parle en direct du studio de CKUT, vendredi le 17 mars. Et en studio, il y a plein de monde ce soir, Esther, allô Esther.
Hello, bonjour.
Lynn, allô Lynn. Puis Claude Lantrop.
Claude Lantrop, is here, CKUT, represent.
Tellement nice. Fait que gros show ce soir pour celles qui nous suivent sur les médias sociaux. On a